It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with Mark Holland, hanging with Daniel, we always love to talk about the sound mind issues, keeping a sound mind. That's what we're all about here on this program. Daniel, I think you've been on with us over a year now, about a year and a half,
something like that.
Mm-hmm. And in the past, you have talked about anxiety, and we're kind of revisiting that subject this week. You want to get a little bit more in-depth on managing anxiety. And why is that? Are you particularly anxious lately, or is that something you see a lot in your practice?
No, you see that a lot in the practice. It's one of the main, anxiety, depression, probably another one would be marriage relationships and communication and those kinds of things. So, yeah, this is always here. We've talked about it a lot, but I talk about it a lot in the sessions, and there's always a kind of a different approach and different slant and different view, and you know, people listening at different times on the radio. Some people hear the shows.
Anxiety stress and anxiety disorders, I've heard, are like going to be, or not already, one of the number one most diagnosed medical problems now.
Easy to diagnose because it's out there. And, you know, we've talked before, and I think people that are aware of these things and are savvy and knowledgeable realize that a lot of this is just kind of the falling apart of society, because if you can roll the clock back, you know, a few decades or 100 years or so, and you had a more supportive community, social community, then a lot of these things weren't so prevalent. And now it's...
Well, and ironically, we just got back from a vacation, my wife and I, and we had some friends there, and it was very structured, and church in the morning and the evening, and we're feeling better than ever, cloud nine, but we can't stay on vacation forever.
Right.
So we need to be able to learn some of those things that we had on vacation, maybe bring those into normal life.
Yeah, so we can discuss some of those things here today. We've talked before about, the way the brain works. And so when we're in anxious mode, let's say, we're in fight and flight mode. And of course, anxiety, depression, those are rooted in fear and shame. And we won't go into that a lot on this show. We've gone into it before, where fear and shame are just pretty fundamental in our psyche, our human psyche, because we know we're mortal and death is imminent. We don't go around thinking of death, but we do go around thinking of, do I have value? Do I have control? Do I have power or resources? And so our fear and shame are connected there, and they're just always there.
Describe again, what is the amygdala?
Amygdala.
Amygdala, there we go.
Yeah. The amygdala, we have two of them, one on each side of the, each sort of hemisphere. And this is in the lower part of the brain. This is where the adrenaline is activated, and it is responded to, and it is the fight and flight center. Now, the thing about this is that when you're in that fight or flight mode, which could be either anxiety or depression, the frontal lobes of your brain are less active. So you're basically
not thinking; you're just feeling.
Yeah, you're just feeling, and you're not thinking your way through it. So it's difficult to have discussions. It's difficult to think your way out of anxiety. And so what we want to talk about today is ways of getting rational and in order to get control. I talk to people a lot about the inbox, which life is an inbox. That's, you know, the inbox is all the unfinished work. And it all has to do ultimately with value, control, and power. But everyone has an inbox. Every day stuff gets put in the inbox. It can be things, current events. You could get the lawn's getting too long. It's got to be mowed. Or, the house has to be painted. Or kids are getting married. Or, a loved one is in the hospital, something like that. It's just kind of inbox. And some of the inbox issues are older. They are things that happened in childhood. Some of the inbox comes from family of origin, and some of those things lay in the inbox. And what they do there is they generate anxiety. They generate depression because they question your value, your control, your power. You know, you can see the control in that these are things that happen that I have no control over. You know, those could be things in the past. It could be things current. Got a bid for replacing a fence that I didn't. It was like several thousand dollars too high. And at some point, I'm not going to have any control over what I'm going to have to spend on this fence. So, you know, there are, the inbox is full of stuff like that. We have to get the inbox organized and so that we can kind of isolate things, file things in, I say label the inbox, and then we, once we label the inbox, then we can determine what needs to be done about certain things. When we do that, we're actually moving, we're actually handling anxiety, not not in the feeling department where the amygdala down there, the fight or flight, but we're actually moving toward the frontal lobes and the reasoning rational part of the brain. And that is very, that's a very key thing to getting rid of the anxiety, is to move into a kind of a rational mode and start problem solving. But a lot of people spend all of their time trying to deal with the anxiety emotions instead of kind of shifting gears and starting to, you know, look toward solutions. It takes a little bit. It's sort of like being in the water and kind of like panicking because you think you're drowning. And the more you panic, the worse it gets. At some point, you've kind of got to get a hold of your emotions and say, you know, all if I have to do is just relax and hold my breath and I'll float, and then I'll start some strokes and get moving. But as you can imagine, if you've ever been in that situation, it's hard to turn off panic mode and get into that rational mode of solving the problem.
How come some people seem to be able to handle more in the inbox than others?
So, I think probably just more organized.
Just more organized.
To begin with. It could get also in the area of people being more concrete, sequential, rather than abstract.
That gets to just basic design of each person. Different people have different strengths and weaknesses.
That's part of it. Mm-hmm. But hopefully, and what we're banking on here is that some of these things can be learned.
Learned for any kind of personality type.
Yeah. So for example, I happen to be married to a gal who is very concrete, sequential. And I, in my nature, am more abstract and also random. Now, it's difficult to be more concrete than I am abstract, but I can learn to be more sequential than I am random. Now, and so that's what we're really talking about here is putting some organization to the way you think. Whether you're an abstract artist kind of thinker or a concrete kind of thinker, we can learn to be more organized, and that's kind of where we get rid of a lot of the anxiety.
Well, you've got here next lists of various kinds.
So yeah, that's a simple tool. If you're people who are, for example, or sequential people probably have lists or can make lists in their minds, and other people need to learn to learn how to make lists. There are various kinds of lists. You can make a mental list. You can write things down. You can. I was talking to somebody the other day who was thinking that they actually need to get almost a bi-month or a month. It's where they can have just a real quick check on the wall to look up and see these are the things that I have to accomplish this month. Mm. And then sometimes we break that down. But there are different kinds of lists. Lists can be very simple. Lists having to do with the way I want to change my emotions and my behaviors can be lists that can be made up, as I've mentioned probably before, even on can make a bookmarker with a short list of character changes or behavioral changes that I'm trying to make. People that have addictions, this can be really helpful for them, where they have a list that it's like it has to do with a statement of purpose, why I'm trying to make this change, what it's costing me not to make the change, and how I'm going to make the change. So, and that can be made even as a bookmarker if a person reads before they go to bed.
So that's a tool. That's a technique. Lists.
Yeah,
now,
lists.
It's interesting because you're describing, I'm more like you, I think, the abstract, random. Mm-hmm. I don't need lists. I can go to a grocery store and I can pretty much remember everything I need to get and kind of intuitively. My wife, a whole other direction. She always has a list. She's writing lists of things to do each day on the phone. But that works for her. But you're saying I could benefit from doing that more.
Yeah. I can remember. I can remember things, but from time to time, I do forget things.
Sure.
And of course, we're going to remember the things that are most important for us. And so, you know, as we get older, we'll probably need to incorporate lists a little more in the way that we do. And
right.
So we're trying to organize, compartmentalize, and prioritize. Let me get back just for a second to the inbox and just explain what I mean by labeling the inbox. I tell people that in your inbox, and we've already discussed about what all these things might be. They can be either, you know, mowing the grass, or somebody punched me in the nose when I was 6 years old. Can be all kinds of things in the inbox. I want to label those, and I suggest to people that probably not more than six labels that kind of represent all of the things in your life that generate anxiety. So the way you've got to get around to doing that is when you feel anxiety, or if you can create the feeling of anxiety that's familiar to you, and then follow that feeling back to a source. And that seems abstract, but it really is something that works. Just kind of stay with the feeling and follow the intensity of the feeling. You might need some coaching to do that, but follow the intensity of that until you get back to the spot where you'll know that's really where it's coming from. You might make several stops on the way back.
So it's like a journaling thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so once you get back there, you label it in a way that when you read the label, it reminds you of that anxiety. I say when you read the label, you should feel the pain. And so once you've got those labels, then the next question is, what do I do about that?
Mm.
And so there's a fix or a remedy for each one of those. And so when we're feeling anxious and feeling overwhelmed, if we can just stop. And another analogy I have used before is like analogy of mixing bowls, where you have mixing bowls stacked one inside the other. And so you put those under the faucet, and you fill up the middle one with water, and it flows over into the next one, which fills up quickly, flows into the next. So you've got six or eight bowls there, and pretty quickly they're all overflowing. And that's emotional overwhelm.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is that only one of those bowls is full, and all of the rest of them are almost empty. And so what we're doing, kind of like to draw the commonness between the inbox and the mixing bowls, is we're really looking for the thing that's producing the anxiety, mm-hmm. and dealing with that, finding a way to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Managing anxiety, a very important subject in today's stressful world. You just watch the news for a while or listen to talk radio and you get pretty anxious. Mm-hmm. Well, when we come back from the break, we're going to be talking about medication. We hear medication for this issue quite a bit. Or maybe an alternative to that. What might be an alternative? We'll discuss that in just a moment. If people are struggling with anxiety and they need to help, they need you to help them with this, maybe a family member they're concerned about, how do people get in touch with you, Daniel?
Yeah, you can contact me through the website at BibleBasedCounselor.com. Email me through that website, or you can phone 425-778-6169.
Okay, and we will be back with more of the Sound Mind broadcast here in just a moment.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor, counselor and life coach. You know, anxiety and depression contribute to every type of psychosis, behavioral problem, and even many health issues. Unchecked, they can ruin your life. But you don't have to let that happen. If you feel that you or someone that you know is struggling with anxiety and depression, call me and let me teach you the tools to build, manage, and maintain a more wholesome lifestyle. Contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland along for the ride today with Daniel. And one of these days I want to go for a ride in your little convertible.
Yeah, we should do that before it starts raining.
That could help manage some anxiety. Nothing like a convertible. Or maybe a Harley Davidson that way. Do you have a Harley too, or a motorcycle? Don't do that.
No, that's a little too dangerous.
That makes a little bit, maybe that's too much anxiety. Managing anxiety this week on Sound Mind. And just before the break, we said we were going to talk about medication, because everybody knows about mm-hmm. that. A lot of people on lots of different meds for anxiety and stress and depression, and versus you wanted to kind of mm-hmm. juxtapose that with meditation, mm-hmm. which might be mm-hmm. more of a biblical approach mm-hmm. to this. So first of all, when is medication necessary in treating anxiety?
To qualify this, we don't shake a finger at people that are on medication, because there are people, a lot of people, that are just so overwhelmed by life because there are certain things missing, things have happened, and they become so overwhelmed by life. The analogy we've used is the person is drowning, and we're shouting swimming strokes,
and
it isn't going to work. And so right. People find themselves in situations where medications really do come to the rescue. But we need to understand what they are and what they're doing, because for long term, they're just not a good idea. Mm. And they should be taken in as light a dosage as you can bear. And then along with that medication, you should be learning tools to in order to manage anxiety and depression. Good or bad. I've talked about psychiatrist Peter Breg, and he's kind of like the black sheep of the psychiatry world because he's very anti-medication, written many books and many publications. So that's a resource for people. If your doctor is prescribing medication, you want to read a little bit about it from people with a different perspective. So Peter Breggin, www.breggin.com, has articles on most any medication that you're going to be taking and alternatives there. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, and that is kind of going against the grain, because mm-hmm. at least in pure psychiatry, that's pretty much all mm-hmm. it is anymore, is they're pharmacists. Mm-hmm. They don't do any kind of real talk therapy mm-hmm. at all, or any kind of family of origin stuff. They just know really well what different drugs do, and they just give you that.
Right. Well, another name, this was surprising, William Glasser, who was one of the authors of one of many authors of a book called Destructive Trends in Mental Health, says that in 45 years of psychiatry, he has never once prescribed a medication. Now, that's quite a record.
Yeah.
And he refers to, he's saying that, you know, people are not ill, they are unhappy. And so he describes mental health as a continuum, which makes a lot of sense. We have physical health as a continuum. Say, for example, I know people that are in a lot better physical shape than I am. But does that mean I'm ill? And how would I get into better physical shape? I do the same things they're doing, maybe not at the pace that they're doing it. And maybe my expectation would not be to get into the kind of shape they're in. Mm. But just because I'm not in the shape that they're in doesn't mean that I'm ill. It's a continuum. Mm. And so I can, in my world, I can be learn to handle my fitness appropriately as they are in their reality. So there's a continuum there. It's important that people know that even though these medications do trick our brains and block certain neurotransmitters and retain other neurotransmitters in our neurosystem, that they some of these, for example, Prozac, a very popular drug, was tested for 6 weeks before it was put on the market. Most people don't realize that because of the power of the pharmaceutical companies, they can get these drugs on the market really quickly. And the understanding is that there's a period of probationary period, which is client report. So if I go into the doctor after taking Prozac, for example, for a month, and he says, how do you feel? And I say, well, fine. Then that goes down as proof that Prozac works. Mm. And so 6 week Ritalin, a lot of people think, well, Ritalin, and don't realize that Ritalin is a synthetic cocaine, a very ramped up synthetic cocaine. So we need to realize what these medications are, and the fact that we don't maybe want to be on these long-term at high doses just because they have a real downside. So we need to be aware if medications are necessary. I'd like to see people taking medications as a temporary thing.
That's most people. And the problem is it's overprescribed. Mm-hmm. Way too many people are just given a drug and you see, call me in the morning kind of thing, when they really should be doing more of the mm-hmm. cognitive work that you ascribe to.
Now, there's a lot more to this and we can't get into a lot of it. I'm going to jump toward the meditation, shall we?
Sure.
And what does this do to the brain? There is a... it relaxes the brain. It puts you toward the rational side.
Meditation does.
Yeah, and there are ways of meditating and using biofeedback. And you know what these things really do is, as I've said, they get you out of the fight flight portion of your brain and toward the rational part of your brain where you're actually doing problem solving. I was reading one from a book, "What Does God Do to Your Brain," which. And reading just kind of shortly through this meditation model that they, one of the meditation models, they prescribe visualize a verse or a phrase. So it could be a verse or from the Bible or a phrase from a hymn, say, for example. And then you sit and you breathe deeply and evenly, and you focus on that, on the awareness of your thoughts and feelings. And you focus on this phrase or this verse. And then you let your, if your mind wanders, you gently bring it back and continue to focus on this phrase or verse and the meaning of the phrase or the verse. And you repeat this process for several minutes. Biofeedback, you know, you're listening to the parts of your, you know, sitting in a comfortable position, feeling the different parts of your anatomy and through your mind. And sensing the different parts, I should have said, sensing the different parts of your anatomy, and as that part relaxed or my feet relaxed. So what are these doing? Really, they're, again, taking us out of that fight and flight area of the brain, and they're putting us in the area of the brain where we're being aware, we're contemplating, organizing our thoughts. And so there isn't really anything so magical about meditation there. And so in the Bible, I was going to bring up a scripture verse here, which says, be filled with the Spirit, speaking to one another in psalms and hymns, in spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord. This is another way, a very biblical way of meditating. And again, what it does is it gets me out of the fight flight part of my brain and into the rational reasoning, contemplating part of the brain. And that is a very critical step to dealing with anxiety. When we can't be worried and anxious when we're actually contemplating a solution, the problem and the solution to the problem.
And I would say, too, there is kind of a difference, there's a major difference between biblical meditation versus like secular meditation, Eastern meditation. Those are seem to have to do more with kind of emptying your mind. The kind of meditation you're talking about is focusing on what is true, what is lovely, God's word, obviously. Mm-hmm. So biblical meditation very much is focusing on solutions, focusing on the good things of God.
Well, I think the secular secular meditation is part of the trip, but really what I'm pointing out is that all it's really doing is getting you out away from the fight flight center and into a contemplative. And we can do this as Christians. And we don't have to stop short of the answer because it's not only some object or idea that we're focusing on, but it's the actual solution,
solutions,
author and finisher of our faith. A lot of people don't assign themselves rest and recreation. And that's a small thing, but it turns out to be very, very important as part of the plan to get to deal with anxiety and when in overwhelm. A lot of times we feel guilty about relaxing and resting and recreating because of all the things we're worried about. And that's something you got to do
if you're going to have a sound mind.
Yeah,
you've got to take some time.
Right, and to get away from the guilt about it has to be an assignment. That's one of the things that I show people how to do that and how to rationalize that and how to, you know, justify it.
Some people feel guilty about taking a break.
Yeah.
Okay, real driver kind of society.
Yeah. They don't want to do anything for themselves because they feel guilty because things are undone, and so they wind up doing not for themselves or for the for a solution either. And so that's what counseling actually, where counseling comes in and is beneficial in all this. As you can see, we've kind of hit the tops of the mountains here, and there's a lot more to it. What counseling actually does a lot of times is to help people identify a root of emotion of the emotional symptoms. You know, where does the anxiety come from? Part of that is like labeling the inbox to help structure new thinking. You know, people would think that, well, I can do that on my own.
No, you need some guidance.
But if you keep circling and keep circling, you can't do it on your own. So help to structure thinking. Be the counselor can be an encourager, like a coach, a motivator, and to keep things focused and keep us getting back on track in terms of learning those learning ways to arrange our thinking. Organize, compartmentalize to handle the anxiety so that it doesn't become overwhelming.
Well, and making an appointment with a counselor like yourself, people need to not, people feel guilty about that for a number of reasons. They need to, if they're struggling with stress and anxiety that's overwhelming them, they need to have that quiet time, certainly with the Lord, but also that time with someone like yourself where that's kind of their time. Mm-hmm. Kind of, and that's how this is me time. This is time where me and Daniel are going to go through. We're going to work on some of these things, find out what keeps biting me that I don't know what it is. You know,
yeah,
that's so important to take a break like that. And that's kind of what a counseling mm-hmm. session can be. A lot mm-hmm. of people think it's a big heavy, but no, it's your time to figure out why things are falling apart.
Yeah, sometimes people need a place like that where they can just talk out loud, process while
Absolutely.
They're talking. There are a lot of people that process while they're talking, and they need it helps to have someone to bounce ideas off of. Friendships a lot of times don't work out because these anxiety issues can be taxing on the person that has the anxiety mm-hmm. and also taxing on friendships. So counseling and coaching is a very good way to take care of these things, get them organized and get going in the right direction.
Well, we've heard this term, confession is good for the soul. And in a sense, that's kind of what happens with counseling. But I think there is something to that. Obviously, the Catholics got something there, mm-hmm. you know, going to confession. But of course, what that can turn into is just kind of just dumping guilt and moving mm-hmm. on, and you're not really dealing with mm-hmm. anything. But it's better than nothing, but if you want to do something that will really help you, I really recommend that you get in touch with Daniel. How do people do that, Daniel?
My phone number is 425-778-6169. That's 425-778-6169. And people also contact me by email through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com.
All your programs are also
and
podcasted.
They're podcasted there. Yes, exactly. Yes.
BibleBasedCounselor.com. More details as well at KCISRadio.com. This has been Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.